It's not just the State of the Union. We get the state of the economic world's reaction. From APM in New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary, in for David Brancaccio, with the global perspective on business and economics. Last night's State of the Union speech, however, was all about the American perspective. President Obama focused on income inequality, wages, jobs, and the U.S. middle class. We wanted to get a sense of how the speech is being received in the rest of the world. So we're joined by the BBC's economics correspondent, Andrew Walker. Good morning.
Good morning, Lizzie.
Well, the State of the Union's dominating the news here in the U.S., but it was a very domestic-focused State of the Union. I want to play a quick clip from it for you, and then let's talk about it.
We need to work together on tools like bipartisan trade promotion authority to protect our workers, protect our environment, and open new markets to new goods stamped made in the USA.
Yeah, that was about as far as we got in terms of doing business overseas. Any ripples over there about this speech?
Well, I have to say, I struggle to find much coverage at all on this side of the pond. Basically, a much bigger American story, for the most part, has been the death of Pete Seeger.
Wow. I mean, that really gives you a sense that this was very much a speech focused on domestic American policy. One thing that I'm curious about, he did talk about reforming our surveillance programs. Those are his words. Do you think that will resonate in Europe?
Yes, to some degree. I mean, the specific remarks that he made in the speech have not been extensively covered, but it's undoubtedly a very important theme, particularly insofar as the surveillance has extended to European leaders. But I think there are other priorities on the day. And if you look at financial markets, what's worrying them there? Certainly it is something in the United States, but it's the Fed. It's not the State of the Union.
The BBC's economics correspondent, Andrew Walker in London. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Lizzie.
Nintendo is having a rough morning, announcing that its operating profit fell 6.9% for the third quarter. The game maker already expects a net loss for the year. You could say Nintendo's facing an identity crisis. For 30 years, it's made games you can only play on Nintendo hardware. So does it have to change to survive? Kate Davidson reports.
Every good identity crisis needs a foil. You know, that character who highlights your own weakness? Hamlet had Laertes, and Nintendo has
the smartphone, because anyone who's carrying a smartphone is carrying a mobile gaming device.
Jeff Ryan wrote the book, well, a book on Nintendo. He says its market has been eaten away by phones and tablets where casual gamers get tons of games free. Nintendo fans buy a dedicated console that only plays Nintendo games. So will the company make its games available on other platforms? Analyst Michael Pachter is dubious.
I don't think there's a chance that they'll do that. They should, but I don't think that they have any intention of it.
Nintendo is making a strategy announcement this week. Jeff Ryan thinks they may try to play nice with other people's software, but not how you think.
People are trying to invite Nintendo to their party, but instead Nintendo is going to invite the other people to Nintendo's party.
He thinks they'll increase the range of games you can play on Nintendo consoles. I'm Kate Davidson for Marketplace.
As listeners of this show know, we have regular conversations with Alan Sloan, a senior editor at large at Fortune magazine. And today, he's trying to convince me of the money to be made in the oh-so-exotic financial instrument of stamps. Remember, the price of stamps went up 3 cents on Sunday, which means if you bought forever stamps like Alan did before that, you got a good return. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Lizzie.
So, Alan, you're going to make me a 6.5% return on my investment overnight?
Well, over the weekend, the value of my portfolio of forever stamps went up 6.5% to 49 cents a stamp from 46 cents.
So how does the money-making part come into play here? Walk me through the math.
If you had bought forever stamps when they first went on sale in the spring of 2007 and you still had them, you would have made about 20% on your money because you would have paid 41 cents for something that's now worth 49 cents. I mean, it's a windfall. I'm surprised I'm not out buying something or going to Davos with the $6 or $7 I may have made.
One of the things I love about you is that you actually went and calculated this return over money market accounts and all sorts of other investment vehicles. How does this compare?
Well, the people at Vanguard, they tracked the numbers for me. In their taxable money market fund, you would have made about 7%. In the tax-exempt money fund, you would have made a little bit under 6%. But nobody was counting on Bernanke. And the last few years, the returns on the money market funds have been something like 0.01%, while you're knocking out a steady 2 or 3 on your stamps.
Now, let's not go too far here. This doesn't sound like I should bet my retirement savings on endless rolls of stamps right now.
No, probably not, especially since there's no way to sell them without going into competition with the post office. This doesn't work as a great personal investment, but when it comes to having something that will always go up in value, this is an investment that can't be licked.
Alan Sloan, Senior Editor-at-Large at Fortune Magazine, thank you.
My pleasure, Lizzie.
You can check out our staff's blog from last night's State of the Union, plus some stories and fact checks on the big issues. That's all at our website at marketplace.org. In New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.